Well, one of the things we want to talk about today was, you know, kind of to that end, where like, how do you make companies more habitable? Like, how do you make teams more successful, manage more successful? How do you like kind of that entire process? So maybe starting as an intro, what are some of the challenges you're seeing with companies these days that make them so inhabitable, like make it so difficult? What are you seeing at that 30,000 foot level?
I think it manifests in many different ways. You could sum it up by these numbers, these words. Their purpose isn't clear. People's contribution is not clear. The impact of those contribution is not clear. The well-being that's created by the impact of individuals or that organization is not clear. And at the end of it all, people don't derive meaning from their work. They want it to be meaningful. And in fact, if you loop that all together, when people have meaningful work, it reinforces their sense of purpose. In other words, you set out to do something. If you actually do it and realize that you've done it, you want to do more. Mm. So to me, that's kind of the cycle that you need to make work properly. At the heart of it is what we would call belonging. You need to feel that you belong to something.
I think with our current culture and our current world, there's kind of two things that seem to be fighting against human nature. And one is like humans do bad with options. So the more options we have, the more unhappy we are. The more unhappy we are, the more we look for options, which is actually an insane cycle that we tend to do. But we know through studies that that just breeds unhappiness. And we're in a time where there couldn't possibly be more options shown to us and variations of what life could look like shown to us. And then the second part is, in the past, because there were fewer options, people tended to know what they were going to do. Now, the irony is sometimes you didn't like that, but you knew there was certainty. Mm-hmm. And we lack certainty. And humans don't tend to like that either. We like a little bit of variation, but it's like, you know, the best example I've ever heard is people watch the same movie more than once, but they've already watched it. Why would you watch it twice, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you have the certainty as to how it's going to happen, that you're going to enjoy this to some level, and the hope that you forgot something so there'll be some kind of variation, right? So kind of going back to like you're looking at organizations and people not knowing the organization's purpose, but I would, you know, it's just their own as well, and their own impact, their own belonging to that organization, or how that all fits together. Do you think that it's our current cultural moment that makes it that much worse?
I think the answer is yes, because when I think of my early working life, I was much more comfortable with it than I was when I left. And when I talk to people in corporations now, their lives are thoroughly miserable compared to how I thought my life was when I first started out. So that's just that's not a measured thing, but that's how it feels. But I also think it's to do with the pace of change in life. Life is moving faster now than it has ever done. Mm-hmm. And of course, people, when faced with change, if it's not of their own making, if they're not doing it for themselves, resist it. So resistance can come in the form of belonging to some tribe, shall we put it, that is wanting to regress, you know. So in the end, you kind of want to set up a situation where people want change for themselves, you know, and that's really what's at the heart of what we're talking about here.
So how do we do this? You work with organizations and look at the challenges that the organization's having with their own purpose, and then how that relates to employees. Silver bullet, but what's the basic, say, framework that you should work from, or how should you see this part of the world, like your work, your life? Like, what should organizations be taking into account?
The first thing is democracy. Basically, the guy at the top doesn't have the answers, doesn't have all the answers. Should there even be a guy at the top? I don't know if you're familiar with Novartis, a guy called Vass, I forget his second name. Novartis in Switzerland, the big pharma company, who has a big program called Unbossing. So where he's basically promoting the idea of removing the concept of a boss from that really large, successful organization. That's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is this question of alignment of your own purpose with that of the organization you work with. That's a really difficult one, I think, for many people, because we tend to be looking at the money, shall we say, you know, and the prestige maybe, rather than whether it's something fits with who we really are. And of course, we don't know who we really are, so that makes it even more complicated, you know. One of the ways to find out is to get a job, see if you like it, and then move on. You know, that's what most of us actually do, I think, in life, to be honest.
And sometimes not move on, even when
you're not happy. Move on necessarily. But then to come back to your first point, you know, in an earlier life, if you were born in South Wales, you'd be a miner. You know, you had no real choice.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you woke up one day saying, "I don't think mining's for me," what would you do? I guess you would emigrate, you know, you ended up in Patagonia or somewhere,
yeah,
herding sheep, you know. That's kind of the way perhaps things happened.
All right, so as you're looking for alignment or purpose in the organization, like, how does this filter down to, say, how teams operate, how organizations operate, how management operates? Like, how do you kind of break that down into more actionables that can occur on a daily basis?
I'm going to tell a little story, because I think one of the areas that no one pays enough attention to, if in fact any attention to, mm-hmm. is the last step in that loop, which is, how do people derive meaning from their work? And I think it comes from feedback from the world outside. Now, getting feedback from the world outside, it's not like a TripAdvisor score. You know, it's not giving a star rating, because that's not for the individual. That is for the corporation. You know, the whole purpose of all of those surveys is not really for the individual who's working in that business. It's really for the corporation to be able to decide who to beat up next. Forgive me putting it that way. I mean, here's an example that really struck me recently. One of our clients is a really large manufacturer of syringes and needles. And the syringes and needles part of their business is only a very small part of their medical device business. They make all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And to someone in that organization, that particular piece of the business is like a dead end. It's like the most boring thing you could be involved in. So if you were looking for a new marketing job, the last place you would go would be that department, that division.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, what's in it for us? There's no excitement here. Nothing's happening. There's nothing new, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then along came COVID, and suddenly they needed to be able to administer 2 billion vaccinations.
Mm-hmm.
And then overnight, lots of people wanted to join this division. Now, why did they do that? It was because a lot of those people had uncles or grandparents or whatever who were at severe risk of death from this virus. And they could see that if they could make a difference here, their difference would have a real impact on people's life, or actually an impact on their well-being, you know, physical well-being, health well-being. So suddenly something that changed from being boring and uninteresting became really meaningful, I'll use that word, to people who wanted to be part of that. You know, nothing else was different. It was the same job, basically. But suddenly there was a purpose for it. And that's my sort of illustration of how just having one thing like that, and that's really about people being able to see the good that they do. How is that manifested in the world? Where is it happening? You know, most, particularly in big corporations, people's jobs are just a piece of the action. They don't see how it fits. They have a manual that explains what their job is, you know. But how it fits in the overall context of what that organization is doing, what good that organization is doing in the world, because they don't really want to know about the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what motivates them. And that's, I think, what's missing. I mean, I don't know about you, but you walk into the lobby of a big corporation and they've got a video playing of, you know, some good thing they're doing in Africa with some medical device product. You know, here we're doing it, and it's on loop and it's playing over and over.
Mm.
And it's kind of goes beyond that, you know, to just being a bit of TV about some particular thing that people have done. People want to see a much more direct connection between what their job is and that effect, that positive effect. So that's kind of a work in progress for me to try and figure out how you might make that happen. I have to say I don't have any direct answers, but it just seems to me this is a big lever if we could find it, to get people to get more excitement out of their jobs. And excitement means motivation, means productivity, means all of these other things that kind of come automatically, you know. You don't need to have change agents. You don't even need to have change agents around when that's happening. You know, people will do it.
I think there's way more opportunity for people to understand the impact they're having in almost any job. And it's so often they're kept disconnected, or sometimes the directions from above don't apply to them. Like they don't seem to fit in their world, right? But when you take your simple needle example, like I guarantee, well, those needles are being used before COVID everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So more connection with what that market's doing, more connection with how the impact that it, what kind of impact you have. And then maybe there's opportunity to understand how can it be improved? Because there's always companies in the most boring industries that find ways to either improve how it's done, whatever it might be, right? Yeah. And so it's giving people that ability to add to that job, to be able to serve the customer better, like to me, that helps give them purpose, right? And like you talk about your feedback loop, where you're meeting a customer need, even if it's minor, but like you're constantly understanding the impact you have, right? And
exactly.
I think we just dramatically underestimate that. I was thinking years ago, I think it was Medtronic, where the CEO came in, but you know, going to the market and it may not have been the CEO, it was somebody, but going to the market and watching the surgeries, seeing how things are being used, right? And then seeing the challenges doctors had. I understand that's a more complicated set of products and stuff like that. But nonetheless, in all these products, understanding who's using it, how they're using it, you know, connects those on the production line with that end user. Like you can connect all those dots. And I think there's a lot of people that adds meaning, right? Just people who do jobs that you and I would probably think are like you can never do it. But if they know they're having impact, it's amazing the kind of jobs people are happy to do, right?
Yeah, and I think back at some of, you know, the jobs I had in the past, like when I was working for this diagnostic company, you know, they were making thyroid tests and oncology tests and all kinds of stuff. I really didn't know what they were used for. You know, I knew, you know, I had a vague idea about what thyroid problems might be, but how did that affect people's lives? In other words, could you connect? I wasn't able to say, okay, if someone uses this test, how much better would their life be because they've used this test? What are those effects? You know, are they able to get out more? Are they able to play with the kids? Are they, you know, day-to-day stuff in people's lives? What are those effects? I mean, I remember the only time that I really felt any connection with that, actually, there were a number, but the one that sticks in my mind was after Chernobyl happened. I know this is going back a long way. Suddenly, there were a lot of people in Ukraine who needed tests for various problems. A lot of thyroid tests detect radioactive iodine, for example, which is one of the contaminants you get from a nuclear problem. You know, suddenly it meant something, you know, because this company was donating these tests to the local authorities there. You know, you could directly understand what you were doing in that situation. But for the average run-of-the-mill person, you didn't get that feeling. And yet, to come back to the needle example, I read somewhere that the invention of the hypodermic needle has probably done more good for the health of humanity than any other single medical device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, isn't that something to be proud of and develop? Because not all of the world has access to hypodermic needles, you know, are not in the quantities and the types that are necessary, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So why not build on that? You know, I know in the end you end up coming up against, we can't make any money from these people, you know, all that sort of stuff. But to me, that shouldn't be the obstacle. You know, the objective should be to bring that health to more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so how do we do this? Like, how do we have folks on the front line more engaged? How do we have teams that work well together? Like, what do we do to try and encourage this in the organizations that we're working with?
Well, I come back to those words that I used at the beginning. You kind of need to make all of these things work. Be clear about your purpose. And I know you can talk about mission statements. They get a lot of bad press for really good reasons. I'm not very keen on mission statements, though I kind of have expressed to you what my mission statement is, even though I may not be terribly good at making it happen, but it's there, you know, it stays there. People need to understand that they are making a contribution to that purpose, you know, and if they aren't, to have it known that they could make a better contribution somehow.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know that contribution has an impact, you know. You have to be able to say, you know, if I say I support work in supply chain, if I can reduce the probability of a stock backorder problem, for example, what impact does that really have? You know, does that mean somebody goes without medicine for a period of time and therefore their sickness gets better, you know, in those sorts of terms?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to say, I make a distinction between impact, because everybody's talking about impact these days, between impact, which is a neutral term, because it can be positive or negative, and well-being, which is the positive side of that. In other words, are you making people's lives better? Are you making the world a better place in some way? And the example I always quote is the invention of the motor car, for example, has made a lot of people's lives better. But of course, there are negative impacts associated with the motor car, which we're living with now in the context of climate change, for example.
Mm.
So you have to be able to measure that whole, what is the well-being overall, you know? So that's the next thing, understanding what that is. And I don't think most people in organizations have any sense of that. I mean, suppose you work in an insurance company, for example. One of our mastermind members works in the reinsurance business. And I find myself asking her, what good is it doing, you know? It obviously is, but that connection is really hard to make.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth making the effort to figure it out, you know? And then, of course, once you've figured that out, then even if you work in insurance, reinsurance, you know, which is a kind of remote financial thingy, you can derive some meaning from that. You know, it's not just making money. You know, it's like feeling like you're doing some good in the world. And then, of course, as I said, you close the loop, because that meaning, that derivation of meaning, reinforces your purpose. It basically says, we set out to do something good. We did it. Now let's do some more of it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess if you're talking about the employee, maybe I don't even like that word employee, by the way, the person who's within that organization, because this applies to your personal life. It applies to your community life. You know, if you apply this thinking to all of those aspects of your life, you can kind of pinpoint where things are missing. In fact, we've been piloting a questionnaire. We actually have it on our website at the moment. We've been testing it to get people to assess their own work lives, community lives, and personal lives around those criteria with a set of questions. It basically says, you know, what's your score? It's this kind of scoring device. And at the moment, it's kind of applied to people who've been looking for another job. It's like, I'm fed up here. You know, what's the problem? It's a kind of diagnosis tool. But it's also, I would like to see it being used as an assessment tool, like, okay, there is this job opportunity or this community project, whatever it is, maybe a new person in my life, hesitate to score them. But, you know, how does it look, you know, in a cold heart of cold light of numbers, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm being a numbers person, of course, I go that way. But at the root of all this, the core of this, is the measure of it, as it were, is this word belonging, as I said, because all of those elements, I think, add up to the sense of belonging. I don't know, one of the questions you might ask is, what's the difference between somebody who joins a company and stays with it their whole life, and people who jump jobs all the time every couple of years, you know, what is their difference? And I'm not saying one is better than the other, but the people that stay with the job for their whole lives, are they doing it just because it's doing it just for the pension, or is it something else? You know,
I think for me, what I see is you end up with two groups depending on the company you're with. You have the very apathetic company where it's like people are there out of straight apathy where they're like, well, you know, I could change. But, and that to me is the scariest thing. And you find that a lot in like companies that lack purpose, that lack any reason for existing outside of transactions. Like, and to me, that's where you get the most apathetic people versus a mission-driven company where you might leave because you don't want to be on this mission, or it's too hard, or it's too difficult, or too strange, or too whatever. But from the perspective of that business, they're happy if you leave because that's fine. You're not on this mission. You're not on this. You're not here to do this. But then those that stay, usually because if they're very, very, very mission specific or very, very clear as to what they're doing, there's a connection there. And I think you get a lot less, like when it's so loud and part of who they are, it kind of clears the field pretty quick, right? The apathetic tend to leave. The committed tend to stay. And yeah, you'll have a few apathetic or a few kind of in the middle, but yeah, I don't know. From my perspective, you end up with those two different camps pretty quick.
And I don't know. I mean, the example I always quote is Elon Musk, whether you love him or hate him, his mission to put men on Mars, you know, is a pretty powerful mission. Mm-hmm. And it clearly motivates a lot of people, you know, to actually do all sorts of things that maybe are not terribly good for their health. But, you know, in terms of the power of purpose, to me, that's a really powerful one.
Well, and to use that illustration, if you ever want, this is what I think about. Elon started SpaceX as a second, kind of a second plan. The first one was just to buy some IBMs out of Russia and shoot some stuff out to Mars, put a little capsule there that green stuff would grow. So the rest of the world would go, hey, we should probably do something about that.
Yeah.
So he was willing to burn half his net worth, 100 million out of 200, to do that. And it wasn't until, so you think about purpose, you think about, like, he's not, in that context, he wasn't trying to make a business to make a lot of money. He literally was going to light up 100 million bucks to tell the world, hey guys, let's wake up here, right? Yeah. And if that doesn't scream purpose or higher calling or whatever you want to call it, dude, I don't know what I can't think of one other person who would let up half their net worth, no problem, for no other reason, but it's he thinks it's the right thing to do. Right. And I mean, and yeah. And early on, this guy is like, was he in his 20s when he first did that? Or maybe early 30s, but so yeah, I agree with you. And that's where you've seen huge, movements forward in the rocket business in general. I mean, the strides they've made in the last, was it 15, 20 years now, I mean, is unbelievable compared to what didn't occur for the 40, 50 years prior to that. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very much to your point. Any last thoughts before we wrap this up? Anything you want to add?
I'm going to promote one book actually, which is really talking about organizations in a whole different way. There's a guy called Frederick Laloux, L-A-L-O-U-X, who wrote a book called Reinventing Organizations. There are two versions of it. There's all text one, 360 pages of, you know, good stuff. And then there's an illustrated one with pictures book, which is by far the easier read and basically has everything in it that you need to know, which talks about different kinds of organizations organized in a different way. And it's the results of some research he did over a period of 3 years looking for companies that operate what he calls the teal manner. He was surprised when he first set out that he'd find any at all, but he found quite a lot in the end. And he had some criteria about them. They had to be operating for more than 5 years. They had to have more than 100 employees, blah, blah, blah. And they had to tick a few other boxes about how they operated in terms of, you know, how they set targets, how they tackled problems within them, how they hired and fired people, you know, things like this. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a view of an alternative world, it's always nice to have a view of an alternative world, not just that's in somebody's imagination, but is also real for some people. To me, that's a motivating thing because the fact that some people are doing it is enough, good enough for me. You know?
All right, I'm going to recap a few of the things we talked about today just so folks have more to walk away with, and then we're going to do the book draw. So some of the things you talked about in you know, employee satisfaction, or you don't want to use the word employee, but group satisfaction, having a purpose and then making sure it's clear, both organizationally and as an individual, and whenever possible, having that be connected and making it clear how their contribution connects to that purpose, and that they can see the impact of that contribution, and you know that the impact is positive would be probably the best route for it to be. And that's where you talked about well-being, that you're living better, and your contribution to society is a positive one, and you're able to connect that back to what you do on a daily task, whether it be a part of the process, like a small part, but knowing what your part does. And doing that, going back to giving people a connection to belonging to that organization and their connection to that purpose at the organization, and kind of bringing it full circle. So keeping those things in mind, that if you want to have a very aligned organization, that this has to be occurring. We talked a lot about how, or a little bit about how, even in the simplest of organizations or simplest of products, you can get a lot of this to happen. If you start connecting the dots that may already be there, but having people be aware that, hey, this is the impact you're having. Like your example with the needle, going back to how it's probably the most impactful invention to humanity, right? Do you think about all the medical stuff that a needle's required for, a hypodermic needle's required for, right? And all the impact that has on everything from disease control to, you know, saving people's lives. It's that's such a simple little product. So, and then having that feedback. So just having this all reinforced with feedback was an important part as well. Anything I missed in the recap there?
No, you got it all. Though I would say the ultimate objective, the unbossing objective, if I can put it that way, is when this becomes a self-reinforcing cycle. Mm. At that point, you don't need someone to drive it. It drives itself. It's a self-driving, we call it the impactology wheel. Self-driving wheel that propels itself through life, leaving fairy dust called well-being in its wake.